Well, welcome to Dairy Livestream. I'm your host, Corey Geiger, managing editor of Hordes Dairyman. We are broadcasting from the Cheese Cave, our studio in downtown Fort Atkinson at the historic W.D. Hord & Sons Company building commissioned by Wisconsin's 16th governor, W.D. Hord, who also founded Hordes Dairyman. Our conversation today will focus on, will high milk prices cover the growing expenses? I'm so pleased to have four great analysts on this episode of Dairy Livestream to share their insight on this important topic. As a reminder to everyone in our audience, this webcast will be available on our Hordes Dairyman YouTube channel 24 hours after the live event. Dairy Livestream is also available anywhere you want to listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts. Search Dairy Livestream from the convenience of your smartphone if you want to download it, maybe listen it in your farm truck, tractor, or wherever else you are. As you hear from panelists today, please submit your questions into the GoToWebinar control panel. There's a question portal there. The earlier you ask the question, the more likely we will get it answered on the air. Let's get rolling with the conversation. Will high milk prices cover the growing expenses? Before we start out with Ben Lane, let's go to our first poll question. At the beginning of this year, dairy replacements were at the lowest level since what year? 2021, 2017, 2013, or 2009? The reason we're asking that question, I think with the current high milk prices we have, the question is how quickly could we have an uptick in milk? And one of the important ingredients to that certainly is dairy replacement. So we'll give everybody about 10 more seconds to go ahead and answer that poll question. And so let's go ahead and see what the audience thought. 55% of you got that right. 2009. Dairy replacement numbers fell to the lowest opening year estimate since 2009. The 4.45 million dairy heifers over 500 pounds represented a 3.4% reduction over the previous year. USDA also estimated fewer than 2.8 million dairy heifers will calve this year. That's the lowest total in 16 years. We welcome Ben Lane to Dairy Livestream to discuss this dynamic and many more topics as we cover, will high milk prices cover the growing expenses? Ben is an accomplished economist who has served the past 3 years as vice president of Rabo Research for Dairy. Prior to joining Rabo AgriFinance, Ben was a senior economist with CoBank and also an economist and a commodity hedging manager with Agrimark. Ben, what are your thoughts on how the income and cost side for dairy could unfold throughout the year?
Yeah, thanks, Corey, and thanks for inviting me to be part of the discussion. I think it's, you know, the question of whether milk prices are high enough to cover the costs is, it's kind of a recurring theme that I've been coming across as I've been getting out and talking to various groups about what our outlook on milk prices is. I mean, we've been, for several years, as someone who has to kind of share my view on what the current situation with milk prices is and what we expect the future to be. It's been several years of not having great news to deliver, really. So I was thinking now, here we are looking at milk prices climbing. We're at where, you know, I think when we're setting record high class four prices, I think it's safe to say we're in a high milk price environment. And I was excited to get out and start delivering that message. But now all anybody wants to talk about is feed costs. So I think that is really what it's about. It's that margin between milk revenue and your feed cost. And I think the industry has gotten pretty good over the past decade or so of working within that environment, realizing it's not just about, you know, is there a certain milk price that makes sense, but it's really about that margin. I think what is a little bit different now is that it's, yeah, milk and feed are kind of the two major pieces of that, but you've got a whole lot more complexity around things that are harder to see, really. I mean, we can look at milk feed margins, but it's hard to see things like labor, energy, pretty much anything on the cost side is getting more expensive, and that's putting a lot of pressure on margins as we go forward. So, you know, I think right now, if you're growing your own feed or the majority of it, I think you're probably in a better situation than somebody who's relying more heavily on purchasing feed. But really, that the costs there are going up as well. I mean, fertilizer, certainly any inputs, chemicals, anything you need to buy is more expensive right now. So there's really not a cheap way to make milk right now. On average, though, I think we're at the point where milk prices are good enough, generally speaking, to cover costs. It's different. There's no, you know, there's no one size fits all solution. You've got certainly plenty of management styles, whether you've got robotics or buying versus growing feed, for example. There's not, you know, one right answer, but I'd say generally speaking, we're probably seeing prices at a level where it's good enough to cover those costs. And to me, a good indicator of that is, you know, what are we seeing in terms of cow numbers? We've seen, starting in May, June last year, we saw culling pick up and saw cow numbers decrease pretty rapidly, probably would have been even more rapidly if we had had the slaughter capacity in a lot of cases. But that was probably a response to where we were seeing milk prices that still weren't looking like they were going to be phenomenal. And you were feeling that cost pressure come up in terms of inflation and everything that was starting to be felt on the cost side of that equation. So I think in response to that, you saw a right sizing of the herd. You saw cow numbers decrease to kind of probably reflect, you know, how much can I optimize this in terms of what I can grow myself versus what I need to buy. But I think now we're seeing to where that's starting to level off. We saw in the most recent milk production report, the first month of gains, minimal gains, I think it was 3,000 head. We're still going to be well below previous year cow numbers. But I think the question is then, yeah, are things good enough that we really see cow numbers taking off? And heifer availability is one limiting factor there for sure. I think, you know, we got to keep in mind we recently were above that 9.5 million head level. We've got the capacity. The cows were just there. If we had the ability to add cows right now and it was favorable to do so, we could get back to that 9.5 million level without having to build anything new. I mean, that becomes another cost that you've got to think about, but we could get there. I don't expect, though, that we will rapidly see the herd rebuild. And I think most of that is because of this high cost environment. And the fact that maximizing profit as a producer doesn't necessarily mean maximizing cow numbers. And I think it's a more kind of strategically managed decision when you've got this type of environment where you're facing higher costs. And every time you add another cow and put another cow in that barn, you're trying to figure out, is it going to cover its costs, or am I overcrowding, or just kind of passing that point of diminishing marginal returns where adding that next cow isn't the right decision? I think we're somewhere in that range where, yeah, probably we're going to see some rebuilding. We're going to see some additions. I don't think we're at the point where we see people rapidly increasing cow numbers. I don't think it's quite that good. And I think, as I said before, once you get up to that sort of 9.5 million head level, then you got to start making decisions about, are we building new barns, new milking parlors, adding actual things that we need to borrow money for and pay for building materials for, and that's a different decision. So I think, long story short, though, yes, milk prices generally speaking are good enough to cover costs right now. It's going to be different for everybody, and the way you manage that is going to be a little bit different. And I think that if we look back to 2014 as kind of the last high watermark, what we're entering into now is probably a period that looks a lot more like that 2010 to 2014 range, where you have higher prices but higher costs and a little more volatility. So I think, yeah, generally speaking, prices are high enough, but it's going to take a little more active strategic management to figure out how do you tweak this? How do you manage through the environment? It's not going to be a matter of, if you're feeling pressure right now, I don't think the right decision is to wait around and see if things get better. It's going to be a matter of working with the people that you've got at the farm, consultants, keep your bankers in the loop. But yeah, it's going to be an environment of active risk management and just operational strategic management for the next foreseeable future.
Thank you, Ben. I really appreciate those opening comments and wide perspective on dairy. I'd like to remind everyone in the audience, if you have a question, go ahead and type it into the GoToWebinar control panel. We'll go ahead and answer those on the air. Or if you miss something, just let me know and I'll try to answer it right away. Before hearing from Sam Miller, let's go to another poll question. In February of 2022, inflation rates reached a 40-year high at what percentage level? 1.9, 3.9, 5.9, or 7.9%? So go ahead and answer that question. We'll give everyone in the audience a few more seconds to go ahead and do that. I think that's important because whenever we're talking about milk prices, product costs in the grocery store, and then all the inputs that we have. Inflation is one of the words that's coming up quite a bit here. So let's go ahead and cut that poll question in. We got 2/3 of our audience that answered it, and 59% of you said 7.9%. And according to federal government statistics, that is the correct answer. Our nation hasn't seen this kind of inflation since the early days of the Reagan administration. That's the early 1980s. It's now my pleasure to welcome Sam Miller back to Dairy Livestream. This is Sam's third appearance on Dairy Livestream, and he has been in the banking business for over 3 decades. After originally starting out with M&I Bank, Sam now leads the entire agricultural banking enterprise for BMO Harris. An articulate thought leader, Sam is also a faculty instructor for the National School of Experienced Ag Lenders. Sam, what are the conversations you and your team are having with dairy farmers in this economic environment?
Oh boy, that's a loaded question, Corey. there's a lot of them. I mean, it's about managing risk. It's all about the high costs of everything. We're going to talk quite a bit about feed, but fuel, fertilizer, labor, parts availability. What about price risk management? What kind of programs should we be looking at? Those are a big chunk of the conversations. I think what I'd like to do, Corey, I think about the question that you asked. You know, will the high milk prices cover the growing costs? And the short answer, as Ben mentioned, is yes for now. And the question is, how long does for now last? And what does that look like? So I think I'd like to really frame the conversation with taking a step back. You know, the good news is that dairies had some good years, not just from some milk prices. Ben talked about how milk prices and rising costs the last couple of years have created a reduction in the dairy herd, and that's absolutely been true. But there's been a couple of other events that have happened, namely COVID. Prior to that, we had a lot of trade war issues. And so there have been some government payments that have come into the dairy sector. And in terms of the Payment Protection Program or PPP loans, in terms of the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program, before that, there were some trade assistance dollars. And what did that do? That really helped liquidity and helped strengthen balance sheets. So the working capital positions and the balance sheet positions of dairy farms in general and farms in general are the strongest that they've been in a number of years. So that's a real quick level set. Now the question mark is, what do we do now? Where do we go forward? And normally, you mentioned I've been in this business for over 3 decades, and usually when we have high milk prices, that creates expansion. It's done that virtually every time. This time, there's quite a bit of headwinds toward doing that expansion. Number one, as Ben mentioned, heifer availability is the smallest it's been in quite some time. You have processing capacity limits. You know, we can talk about labor issues across the economy, and processors are having difficulty attracting labor too. And there's just plain not the plant capacity to take on a substantial amount of increased milk. If I know dairy producers know this, but have you tried pricing what a building expansion would look like, whether it's in lumber or steel or any other components? What about the equipment to go into it? What's the backlog on getting that kind of stuff? And then you've got the base and quota programs that many processors have added. Part of that's because of that processing capacity, but that's acted as a governor in certain parts of the country as well. So we've seen higher levels of inflation. It all starts with fuel. Fuel has high correlation with feed costs, obviously with fertilizer, but you've got inflation in labor rates and you've got it in parts and equipment. I'm going to come back to that in a second, but I just want to diverge to back to your original question. The other part of it is, what are your risk management programs? So one of the reasons I answer the question that the higher milk prices are covering feed costs now We have a pretty good proxy for that, and that's the dairy margin coverage program. So the DMC in 2021 paid an average of $2.54 a hundredweight. So the DMC max level is $9.50 margin between milk prices and feed cost. And so we were more in the $7 neighborhood in 2021. Well, the first couple months of this year, it's a dollar to a dollar and a half above that $9.50 margin. So that tells you that the milk revenues are outrunning the costs again for now. And so the question mark is how long will that continue? So the conversations that we're having with our clients are, what type of coverage levels, how are you going to manage this price risk? And it's on both the income side of the income statement, and it's on the expense side of the income statement. The last comment is that margin is going to compress at some point in time. Either milk prices will come down, or the cost structure will continue to increase. And what happens then? Well, it takes a while, but the market will respond and bring them back into line. The issue is, we'll likely see petroleum costs eventually come down, which will mean that fertilizer costs will come down, which will mean feed costs will come down at some point in time. But the other parts of the income statement are not likely to come down much. Labor costs have gone up. You can't give that back. Your employees are not going to give that back. Many of the parts and equipment, especially if you do an expansion project, that's overhead and it's built in. So you've got that higher cost structure if you decide to invest in additional plant and equipment. So even though we may see some of the major costs come down in the future, some of the other costs are not likely to. So keeping an eye on margins, managing price risk is as critical as it's ever been, and frankly, more challenging when you've got the volatility on both sides of the equation. The good news side of that is, I'd much rather see somebody have to make those decisions when you have a high price environment. It's pretty brutal when you're in a low price environment from the income, from the revenue side of things. So it is a better decision point when prices are at record highs than when they're at record lows and you're trying to figure out what to do next.
Thank you, Sam. And, you know, once, you know, what will come down first, who knows? But from the manufacturing side of it, you know, we our country, the United States, doesn't make a lot of chips. And there's a new chip plant going online in Texas. There's one in Ohio, and we're talking about plants that are over $1 billion to build. But before those come online, it's going to be years. And the manufacturers, from pickup trucks to tractors, are going to have to decide where GPS systems go, where the chips go. I was talking to another manufacturer and said a lead time right now on a PTO shaft is 52 weeks. Won't even get a quote on a price. I just had my one of my field implements fixed up for spring planting here. And I took it in January. I'm going to pick it up tomorrow. And price to fix that bugger went up 20% from the quote, just because some of the parts it needed went up that much. And, you know, they got to pass those along. So that's the realities that everyone on a farm is facing. Before we hear from Steve Martin, let's go to another poll question. What percent of the world's coarse grains and wheat do Russia and Ukraine export? Coarse grains, what does that mean? We're talking corn, sunflower seed. So select one of the following: answer 3.5, 13.5, 23.5, or 33.5. So go ahead and answer that question. I think this will be really important for our next conversation here with Steve Martin, who studies feed intensely. So we'll go ahead and give everybody a couple more seconds to answer that poll question. And as a reminder to our audience, we're getting some questions coming in for our panelists here. Go ahead and type those into the GoToWebinar control panel. We'll get those answered in the second half of the web program. The correct answer is 23.5%. So 40% got you right. Just think about that. Two countries account for 23.5% of the wheat and corn and other coarse grain exports. That region is in major crisis right now. So that you add that turmoil in the grain markets, you got high energy, high fertilizer costs, high fuel costs, high herbicide costs, if you can even get some of the herbicides, and drought. And this will greatly impact feed prices. So we're going to turn to Steve Martin to answer some of those questions. This Auburn and Texas A&M University graduate is the founder of DNMC Milk, more formally known as Dairy Nutrition and Management Consulting. The business Steve founded works with dairy farmers throughout the West, Southwest, Texas Panhandle, and several other dairy regions in the U.S. and throughout the world. Steve's a regular columnist to our print edition of Hordes Dairyman in our Dairy Rations column and contributes regularly to our e-newsletter, Hordes Dairyman Intel. Steve, feed is the biggest expense on a dairy. How are you approaching feed and nutrition in the near term? And how might that situation evolve this fall? Steve, the floor is yours.
Yeah, thank you, Corey. It's great to be with y'all today, coming to you from sunny Florida. So, you know, we've talked a lot about economics today with two folks that are in the banking world. And so what I'm going to do now is try to steer that economics discussion a little bit towards biology. And so I like to think about what we do when we build rations or we build diets as we're really babysitting the confluence of economics and biology, and we're trying to find the best way to take feed and convert that feed cost into milk income. And so this is what we live and breathe every day. We live and breathe this when corn is $2.75 a bushel, and we live and breathe this when corn is $7.75 a bushel. And so the funny thing about it is, in a lot of ways, some of the things don't change, because what drives the profit situation, profitability for our clients who are our bosses, and their cows are their bosses, so we all answer to the cow, but the margin between that feed cost and the milk income is really what drives everything. And so that margin can be really good at cheap feed. That margin can be really good at high feed. So a lot of the answers don't change, but to say that we aren't at a fevered pitch of managing this ratio, this difference, this income over feed cost, to say that we're not at a very stressed point of managing this right now would be an untruth. Conversations with our clients have been at a high level of challenge to us, is like, how can we navigate soybean meal that costs $550 a ton? How can we navigate corn silage in some parts of the world that is north of $90 a ton as fed? You know, these are heretofore prices we've never contemplated. These are even in excess of organic prices that we have played with in previous years. So just to give you a little bit of structure for that, you know, we talk a lot about cost per pound of dry matter intake, and it's one of my favorite metrics that we look at, because it does, you know, we have different cows eating different amounts of feed depending on a lot of different things, but the cost per pound of each dry matter pound of intake is really a great number, and it's one of those things you have to take out to the third or fourth decimal to really see differences. So I'd say, you know, previous years in the Southwest and parts of the places that we would work, and then a little bit now in Florida, we would see these numbers being, and you know, aggressive number might be 10 cents per pound of dry matter for a guy that's got very good cost of forage production. And then that number might be 12 or 12 and a half or so in the region where forages are just more expensive to grow because of a variety of reasons. Right now, those numbers have gone from a dime, you know, 10 to 12 cents up to 15 to 16 cents a pound. And so to put that in perspective, and the reason why we have to look at cost per pound of dry matter in a multiple decimal approach is that going from up one cent per pound of dry matter is 55 cents of feed cost on an average Holstein eating 55 pounds of feed. So you know, when we talk about feed cost changes and we're managing rations and trying to find opportunities to save feed costs, a lot of times we get real excited about some great idea we came up with for clients that'll save 4 or 5, 6 cents per cow. And we herald that, and we're glad to put it in and take the savings and multiply that by a lot of cows, a lot of days, and next thing you know, you can buy a combine. But when you take that 5 or 6 cents per cow that we're normally playing around with trying to look for advantages, you say that simply cost per pound of dry matter going from 10 to 12 cents adds over a dollar total feed cost. It just dwarfs the normal advantages that we're looking for. Now, the good point is that as we've talked about up till now, milk prices have covered this. And I'd say that all of our clients to this point are pretty much have the pedal down to make as much milk as possible. We haven't had people come to us really and say, hey, I need a quarter of feed cost savings. Where can you find it? But what I got to make a note of right now is that many of the rations we're doing today, we're still using contracted feed prices in our models. And so those are going to run out in the next 3 to 6 months. You know, I mean, certainly I think nobody would have stuff contracted past, you know, September, most likely, except for feed that's maybe stored on farm would maybe be considered a locked price. But as we start coming off of contracts with people that have, you know, $360 canola meal, for instance, out west, and that number, you know, comes back in at $435, $100 more a ton, or soybean meal that's contracted and comes off contract and goes to $550 a ton. You know, these are the things that are really going to challenge our production function thought process of that marginal, the value of that marginal pound of milk, and to make sure that we're using every ingenuity, every a bit of our linear programming solving ability, every bit of good ideas, how can we feed cows better to make sure that we can, you know, return that investment. So a couple of little things that are tactical is like shrink, for instance. So it's maybe this is the time that it makes sense to improve gene area to reduce shrink, because shrink right now costs a lot more than it used to as you see these things blow away. Ideas of heifers, you know, are you letting your heifers tell you how much they want to eat and you're just filling them to appetite and growing a nice replacement heifer, or to be more thoughtful about that and let's do a targeted approach and feed heifers a lesser amount of feed but get them. How about MUNs or something that we know is a measure of inefficiency of nitrogen or protein in the ration, and we all have a level for what the perfect MUN for our clients' dairy. We always probably put a little cushion in that. We're getting pressure from the environmental side. So right now, when soybean meal is $550 and urea is over $1 a ton, having an excess of nitrogen that's spilling over into high MUNs is a bad economic decision. So to sum it up, we just what we're already good at. We need to take more samples. We need to not overfeed any ingredients. We need to think of feeding nutrients, not ingredients. If it makes more sense to feed something that lowers your feed cost that you've never fed it before, and you have smart people tell you the time to exercise some flexibility and make sure we're maximizing that mark or that income over feed cost.
Thank you, Steve. You know, really good insight. Wait, I appreciate you digging down into that cost per dry matter and really how that's driving the cost side of the equation. A penny of dry matter and a 55 cent swing on 100 weight there, that's amazing. We're going to go to one final poll question here before we hear from Chris Wolf. And Sam Miller gave a little bit of an allusion. Prelude to that, we're going to talk labor here. In February, the U.S. jobless rate edged to a 50-year low at what percentage? 1.8, 3.8, 5.8, or 7.8%? And as the job market's definitely tight, and as Sam shared, once labor costs go up, that money doesn't come back. So that will be a permanent shift for all of us. with payroll checks. So we're going to give the audience a little bit of time to finish this answer. Also a reminder to use the GoToWebinar control panel. Go ahead and type your questions in. After we hear from Chris, we'll go ahead and get those answered. So Caitlin, if we want to go ahead and see what the audience had to say here. 68% of you got it right. Now, if you're trying to hire employees, 21% of you might be right there. It seems like you can't find anyone to apply for a job, but the correct answer right now is 3.8%. At the start of the pandemic, that number was closer to 3.5. And Chris Wolf, welcome back to Dairy Livestream. Chris is an economist with Cornell University, and he's been with us since the very first broadcast of Dairy Livestream on April 15th of 2020, as we scrambled to get everyone some answers to what was going on at the start of the pandemic and how to keep milk flowing and all those things. So Chris, can you tie this conversation together on will high milk prices cover the growing expenses?
Thanks, Corey. I'm happy to try. So as others have highlighted, the costs have increased for producing milk across many different expense categories this past year. Looking at the Cornell Dairy Farm Business Summary comparing 2021 to 2020, feed expense per hundredweight was up 12%. Labor expense was up. That's a bit of a complicated story here because of some of the labor regulations that have gone into effect here. Fuel and utilities expenses were up more than 20% each, and total operating cost was up 6%. And so that was to complete the year 2021 calendar year. And this was prior to the recent spikes that we've seen in some of these things related to the international events. The income over feed cost margin, you know, is definitely correlated with most people's profitability on the dairy farm. And so it's a good proxy to use. And right now it suggests that the margins are a pretty decent level compared to historic, right? However, that you know, these increases in labor, fuel, fertilizer, and other expenses mean that these income over feed cost margins aren't quite as healthy as what we would have thought they might be historically, especially if you're living in cash markets. Additionally, you know, we've gotten used to, all of us have gotten used to borrowed capital being cheap for a long time now. And one response to this inflation that we keep talking about is almost certainly going to be higher interest rates to tamp down inflation on the part of the Federal Reserve. And the result is going to be more expensive loans in the future. And this, you know, how much and to what extent and when and are all major sources of uncertainty that everybody's kind of dealing with at the current time. Also, you know, there's always the issue that average numbers that we use are definitely useful as a benchmark, but they can be deceiving depending on where you're at as far as what's going on in milk and feed markets. You know, Sam mentioned the base programs. Those are biting a lot more in some areas than they are in others. And Steve mentioned the feed costs. And I, you know, I think if I'm buying hay right now out west, I'm paying a pretty different price than where I'm sitting right now in the northeast part of the country. So, you know, we've got kind of those considerations. The milk markets, both nationally and internationally, as Corey pointed out at the beginning, continue to suggest that prices are going to remain high for the remainder of the year, as milk production lags last year, not only in this country, but also in the European Union, in New Zealand, and in Australia, so major dairy exporters. High feed prices are happening around the world with these international events. We've got weather events. We've got regulations in some countries, in particular environmental regulations, that are kind of putting a governor on the milk supply response, at least in the near term. And, you know, butter and products that use butter fat in particular are pretty tight all over the globe right now. The integration in the world markets is a two-edged sword. We get benefits from imported inputs and we get access to growing international markets, but we also get the demand and supply shocks from international events, including, you know, natural disasters and man-made conflicts like the current war. And so this is another source of uncertainty as we move through 2022. And I think the advice so far has been real good as far as keeping an eye on the major costs and being it's funny how changing prices will focus people's attention, right? So feed costs change, and the rational response is to look real hard at the more expensive input. And you know, labor cost changes, we've definitely seen has done the same thing also. But and I'm looking forward to the discussion that we have here.
Chris, I think I'm going to start out with you here. We got some questions coming in here, and I think some regions of the country may, a lot of regions do have these base excess programs in place, predominantly by cooperatives. But in some parts of the country, they may not be really enforced right now. Other parts there are. And that's certainly going to put a governor on milk production, if you will. We're talking engines and minimizing fuel input here, but we're going to talk about milk production. In the Northeast, there's some pretty stringent plans still in place, largely because of limited processing capacity. Just talk a little bit about that.
But you're absolutely right, Corey. So in this part of the country, there's the base plans. You know, a lot of these base plans have actually been on the books for a long time. And in fact, the first base plans from cooperatives date all the way back to the 1880s. So, you know, kind of dealing with the imbalances between supply and demand has always been a challenge of the dairy industry. But, you know, at the current time right now, we're in this part of the country, there's a couple of base plans that have a lot more, have a lot bigger discrepancy between the base tier and the excess or overbase tier. You know, and the bigger the difference there, obviously, the more they're discouraging milk production. And it does have to do with challenges as far as having enough processing capacity, not just having enough capacity, but having enough workers so that you could run shifts. Because in some cases, and there's been plants that if they could add an extra shift, maybe they could soak up some of that. But these labor market challenges for the past couple of years have made it really difficult to even take advantage of those opportunities.
Ben, do you have anything to add in that area? Because you really follow this pretty closely too.
Yeah, I think that's right, that the base programs or tiered pricing, whatever they might be, are definitely a major factor limiting. One of the handful of factors limiting our ability to really expand production right now. And I think Chris made a good point about the fact that, yeah, maybe we've got the capacity, but we don't have the workers. I think there's a lot of cases where maybe the demand is there. There's the sales teams want to sell the product. They want the product to sell. The producers want to make the milk to put into the plant. But at that plant, you can't be running as many shifts as you might like. So I think that's more realistically what's limiting capacity at this point. I think going forward, that's going to loosen up to some extent. I think there's a little more give there as we start getting people back in the plants and able to run those shifts. That'll help. One thing that we're watching, though, as you see natural gas prices go up, this is going to be especially important for Europe. But plants, butter and powder plants, milk powder drying plants, those are it's an energy intensive process. I mean, that becomes really expensive when gas prices get high. So you could potentially run into a situation where if global skim non-fat dry milk prices come down, then you might not be willing to take milk into that plant just because it's, you know, where it used to have been a balancing role. You used to just dry the milk so you had some time to figure out where you were going to market it. Now maybe it might be a little bit prohibitive in terms of cost to do that. It's not as beneficial if prices come down for those products and if gas prices go up. So there's a few still variables that could lead to some of these lingering needs to control that milk flow.
Thanks, Ben. I think we're going to turn this next audience question to Sam first, and if any other panelists want to jump in. So we answered part of this person's question with Chris and Ben, but I'm going to read the entire question here so you have broad perspective. Talk a bit about how to approach a potential dairy expansion plan and how to approach the milk quotas as it relates to budgeting and relationship with the processor. And I know Wisconsin pretty much hasn't seen this situation until recently. So Sam, you've been having those kind of conversations as well.
Yeah, we have, Corey. And you know, if you want to do a significant expansion, if you want to even do a pretty modest expansion, you have to have that conversation with your processor. And if that dairy producer then wants to finance it, once they get to the bank, the bank's going to want to know, is there a slot for that milk? Do you have a contract for it? And guess what? That needs to be in writing. So you got to have the evidence for it. It can't just be the word of the field man. It's got to be in writing that hey, we understand this is how much additional milk we'll take, or we'll take it for this many head, et cetera. I think that's one part of the conversation. In today's environment, the other part then is, how expensive is it going to be to put on that expansion? We have one of our clients going through an expansion right now, and the appraiser just scratched their head. They didn't know how to appraise the thing because costs had been going up so quickly. And by the time we, from the time we started the approval process to the time that the final bids were in, we had to increase our lending facility by about $300,000. So in that particular project, which was a significant amount. I mean, it was maybe a tenth of the project. And that's, that was, you know, 6 or 8 months ago when we were going through that. So it's even worse today. So it's a twofold answer to that question. One is you got to have a home for the milk. And second, what about the costs and how quickly can you get them?
Does anyone else, Ben, Steve, or Chris, want to add in on that one?
I think we often have some challenging nutritional goals for this unknown, right? So you can't take a cow that you started off well and tell her that she's now making tier two milk and just slow her down. Now, I'd say that we did learn a few things during the pandemic about that I think were helpful that we'll have in our toolbox next time that call comes. But we live with, at least in the Southwest, we live with the reality that any time we may have some tier two milk. And so nutritionally, we have some ideas for that.
You know, you talk about, I appreciate you sharing the documentation on that one particular instance there, Sam, of a cost overrun. And Chris Wolf talked about this real briefly in his opening comments. But Sam and Ben and anyone else who wants to chime in, how might Fed interest rates change the effect of capital availability here? I mean, right now money's cheap, but I don't think that's going to continue.
Yeah, so I think there's a couple answers to that. When we talk about interest rates, it's not one rate, right? So what the Fed has control over are our overnight rates, our short-term rates, and guess what? They're going up. You know, you can read all the speculation. The Fed has what they call the dot plot, where all the governors vote what they think interest rates are going to be over the next several years. We just had a 25 basis point increase last month. Their next meeting is in early May. They're expected to increase them another 50 basis points. That's 0.5%. And another 0.5% in June and another 0.5% in September. So you think about that, short-term rates going up another 1.5% over the next 6 months, or a little less than 6 months at this point in time. And even more rates at later in the year and into next year. So at the short end, your line of credit and short-term borrowings, those rates are going up, and they're going up pretty significantly from what they have been. At the longer end, 5, 10, 20 years, they have not gone up as much. They've gone up, but you know, by perspective, the 10-year treasury right now is trading at about 2.6%. It's up about 1% from where it was a year ago. So once you get out a little bit longer for longer term rates on real estate or equipment, yes, they're going up, but they're not going up like the short term rates are. So I don't know if Ben or Chris want to weigh in with some other thoughts.
I'd say I think that, yeah, in the near term, it's much more dramatic. I mean, we're seeing the moves now as those rates increase. It's kind of a risky move, though. It's a difficult time to be raising rates because a lot of what's driving some of this inflation is really more about supply constraints. So increasing those rates and trying to slow down demand is a little bit of a more challenging proposition when you've already got kind of questionable demand, and it's probably pretty sensitive right now. So yeah, I think in the near term, it's certainly getting more expensive to borrow money, and that's why, you know, as you start thinking about more capital intensive projects, that becomes a different trade-off. But yeah, longer term, it's going to be a little bit more uncertain, I'd say.
There's a few logistical points that I might add that intersect with what we do in this area, and it has to do with credit limits and interest costs on feed lines and interest costs on stored forage. And it's not nearly as significant as a $100 increase per ton of an ingredient. But when you add it all up, the cost of money does touch what we do. And I continue to say, if we can find a way to get the same heifer grown or the same milk sold somehow magically with less input volume, then that cost of money is going to be an improvement for total cost management.
Steve, I think one of the things that there's some nutrition questions coming in here, creativity might just be needed right now. You know, maybe you're working with clients that have pre-purchased quite a bit of corn or soybean meal, or maybe have a higher inventory level of forage, but how can you do some juggling maybe to preserve some of that inventory and maybe be more creative on heifers or dry cows or something in that area? Talk a little bit about that, please.
Yeah, so I'll start with the heifers. The heifers, whenever I send a heifer ration to a client, I make a comment that says, if you don't like this ration, please let me know. There are probably a better ways to do it correctly and have it fit better your inventory or your choices. And there's just a lot of ways to build heifer rations. So that would be a place to really exercise some flexibility. And you know, if a dairy producer is not feeding a targeted intake approach for heifer, you know, there's significant cost savings that are there, research-based, field-proven, a way to have lower feed costs for heifers. And so that's something that most nutritionists are good at nowadays. It's not that new anymore. We tell the heifer what she's going to eat instead of the other way around. Culling is the thing that comes to mind here. I know this isn't nearly really in the nutrition area, but on the heifers, you know, why are we feeding heifers that we don't plan to milk? Beef prices are good. Make sure that you're using genomics or whatever it is, how you want to decide to right size your heifer program. So on the milk cows, there is flexibility, though it is less. An example that I might throw out is traditionally we fed a lot of bypass soybean meal, and you know, we like that, and that's certainly a good way to get some good amino acids in the cows. But is it possible that now we need to use the linear program to decide whether bypass amino acids actually plus a lower cost byproduct? Like, I know this is oversimplification, but you know, soy hulls plus bypass lysine and bypass methionine equaling a bypass soybean meal product and end up doing that cheaper. A topic that there's a lot of smart people that I really respect that are on the other side of the issue, but we tend to feed groups of cows based off stage of lactation and production capability. And I know that there's two sides to that, and some smart people would disagree with me on that, but there are oftentimes opportunities to take cows that are in different stages of lactation and reallocate cost and usually save cost on some cows. And this could be in the additive area. It could be in the quality of protein area. And I think that just comes into the point is right now we're not allowed to overfeed anything. And urea is probably the best example of that as it relates to MUNs. Traditionally, we've kept a little urea in all rations just to make sure that we have enough. Well, that's when it costs $400 a ton. Now it costs $1,200 a ton. And we have a very nice tool every day on every load of milk that's MUN that helps us know whether we're in excess on that. And that is an oversimplification, but that is an area that we need to be watching. So creativity, you know, maybe you're a dairy that's traditionally fed soybean meal, and that's just where your comfort level is. You know, maybe right now in your area, maybe canola is the right fit, or maybe even something that's a little bit out of the norm in the dairy world, like cottonseed meal. But you know, those are ideas. We have starch. We like all of our starch to come from corn silage or some kind of corn grain product. You know, don't forget there's also starch in wheat mids and starch in corn gluten feed. So thinking about nutrients instead of ingredients is the way that the models really work. The model doesn't care whether that starch comes from a corn kernel or a pound of corn gluten, as long as you describe the starch correctly to that cow, to the model.
Thank you, Steve. Here's another question. We'll probably start with Chris and go to Ben here. Milk, you know, we're talking about high milk prices here. That's part of the reason we're having this entire conversation. But you know, interest rates start ticking up. The demand, you know, we're really dealing more with supply chain issues than high, you know, a lot higher demand. So should we be concerned that higher milk prices and inflation could affect consumer purchasing habits of milk and dairy? What do you think, Chris?
Well, I mean, absolutely. I mean, we think of demand for dairy products being inelastic, and this is true, which means that you get smaller changes in quantity relative to changes in price. So if we're looking at dairy product prices that are 3 or 4% higher, you know, we're going to see a decline in consumption, especially to the extent that there are substitutes available, but it's going to be less than that increase in prices. However, I mean, you know, just like Sam was talking earlier about the role of the government payments in the last couple of years on the farm side, there was a whole lot of stimulus that also went to all across the economy. And, you know, to some extent, some of that's probably wearing off also. And so I think we do have to be concerned about how demand stays up for these products. And we do want to, you know, maintain the kind of the buying habits, the purchasing habits and consumption of dairy products. So, you know, that's a concern at some level. Absolutely, I would say.
Ben, anything to add in that area?
Yeah, I would agree. And I've been a little bit surprised, honestly, that we haven't seen a little more pushback on the demand side already. I think that largely to this point, we've been able to absorb some of those increases at various points along the supply chain before they really hit the consumer. I think this year we're going to see that hit consumers much more. But so far, I mean, dairy compared to some other things that the other costs the consumers face, especially things like fuel, not too bad, but that's really not the equation. They don't think like, okay, I'm gonna buy less, I'm gonna make less trips, but I'm gonna consume more dairy because it's cheaper. So it's really more of a whole budget situation. And I think that will make people change decisions about taking, am I gonna not take that trip or go to this meeting somewhere, go out to a nicer restaurant? There's gonna be areas where you see people cutting back. And I think that still we're probably in a little bit of a, you know, period where people are still excited about various restrictions being lifted, eager to get back out and doing things. But yeah, at some point, I'd say this year, we're going to start to see some of those realities setting in and some choices being made about how do we budget and make sure that we're not getting out of control on those costs from the consumer standpoint.
Steve, a few of our audience members want you to expand just a little bit on nutritionally, how to deal with tier two milk other than what you've already mentioned. I know gearing up for higher quality and the amount of forage is critical, but if you could talk a little bit about that.
You know, one thing I'd say that we learned on High Point is that, you know, we've bred and managed these cows to make milk. And so it's not like there is a dial on the side of them that we can just click it back. And so, you know, we did a few things last time that I think were helpful, and you know, the quickest lever to pull is not nutritional, but as much as it is you know, changing your days dry, for instance. So if you do some early drying of cows, that was a way that we got some milk out of the immediacy equipment, and that does have a nutritional angle there because you know, we if we put a cow in a dry pen for an extended period, we have to make sure that we're managing that dry cow nutrition so that we don't pay for that when that cow freshens as a 3.5 body score cow that has this risk. So early dry off is certainly one. You know, I think it's a really good question to ask and look and see, is your volume math, is it solids corrected or not? And a different answer for different markets. If it's not solids corrected, you can do things that we would normally do, that if a client comes to me and says, hey, we want more butter, fat, and protein, and I say, I've got 10 ideas for that, but they all have a risk of losing milk flow. Well, that sounds like a perfect opportunity to reduce milk and minimize the reduction of an income. But the problem with that is if you're a good co-op member, that really is not helping achieve the goal of the tier tiered pricing in the first place, in that unless you're in a strictly fluid market, you're not really going to move the needle on the cheese plants and the butter plants that that need less. So if we have cows set up in groups already, which we would, most of our clients would not be on a one group TMR. Most of our clients would have a mid to late lactation approach. And so our thought process then was, obviously, close up fresh cows, high cows, breeding range cows, you know, up through mid lactation, you know, life is pretty much normal. And then when you look at those late lactation cows, you know, don't forget that those cows are gaining weight as they go through later lactation. So we can do some things in the diet with starch levels. We can, for instance, because you don't want to then dry off a skinny cow, because if you lower the energy on a late lactation cow, she might milk the same and dry up too thin. And so protein is a good, dietary protein is a good controller for that, and the fact that we can dial protein levels back, run a really low MUN on those late lactation cows, and make sure they've got plenty of energy to dry off at a correct body condition, but you may have limited their protein supply a little bit to actually make milk. And then we even did some limited feeding. And I mean, this is, sounds crazy, and it, you know, it just went against a lot of things, but some of the challenges we have with economics every day on tier one milk is getting late lactation cows to eat not too much feed. Sometimes they really want to eat feed and they want to have poor feed conversion. So, you know, there are ways to control some intake. You might do it through roughage levels. You might do it through ionophores. You might do it strictly through saying, hey, these late lactation cows are only going to get 50 pounds of dry matter intake, and that's it. There's some negatives that come along with that. You better have good fences, and you better have, you know, not overcrowding. And maybe that's not the right answer, but it should be in the conversation.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. We're going to wrap up with one question here. This could end up being a pretty good year, especially right now if you pre-purchased your inputs and those things and these with these milk prices. Sam, how would you advise using that extra cash?
Yeah, so you're right, Corey. It's setting up that way. So the thing is, what have we been talking about? We've been talking about at some point in time, this is going to correct. So using that cash to set yourself up for that correction. And I think that falls in a couple of ways. First off, it's building up working capital. So if you've got accounts, get them cleaned up, be on prepay or be on, you know, early pay instead of having accounts payable. Secondly, pay down your line of credit so that you've got that availability, and then build up the rest of your working capital so that when and we don't have enough revenue coming in to meet higher expenses. It seems to me in my career, expenses always correct after income does. You've got that cushion, that working capital cushion, to be able to pull off of it. The other thing to do is we've talked some about labor. So if there's some automation or efficiencies that can be built in to the dairy operation, that's another potential use for that cash flow. So there's a couple of ways to go.
Ben or Chris, any final comments to that question?
I would just echo the labor thing. I mean, and working capital definitely too is giving yourself a buffer. But yeah, labor, as Sam said, you know, it's going to be tough to give that back. So any investments you can make in the medium to long run to trying to optimize your labor is beneficial.
Absolutely. I think labor efficiency is what you're looking at if you can get it. Unfortunately, this is also a time when some of that stuff's hard to come by.
For sure. Yeah. So our next dairy live stream, we'll talk about, will dairy demand hold throughout 2022? We're going to air that episode on Wednesday, April 27th, same time that day, 11 a.m. Central Time. And it will be archived just like this episode on our Hordes Dairyman YouTube and podcast channels the very next day. We look forward to seeing you then. And on behalf of Ben Lane, Sam Miller, Steve Martin, Chris Wolf, I am Corey Geiger, your host. Thanks for joining us today. We wish you all a good day. Goodbye, everyone.